This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
Hey, good morning. Welcome into In Focus News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, joined here today, as we are every couple Tuesdays, by Manhattan City Manager Ron Fear and Mayor Mike Dodson, who join us on the program. Thanks, guys, for being here once again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon.
Of course, Manhattan City Commission has their meeting tonight, 7 p.m. You can check that out by attending in person, or they're also broadcast three different places, cityofmhk.com/TV, the Manhattan Facebook page, and also on Cox Cable Channel 3. Well, today is kind of an interesting day. It is September 3rd, and 1 year ago on this date in particular was Labor Day. And, of course, a lot of people still fresh in their minds, the Labor Day flood of 1 year ago. A lot of stuff has happened since that time. There's been a lot of improvements made here, I know, in the past year, but still some work to be done as we speak. Isn't that right?
It is. Obviously, we still have a Wildcat Creek Resiliency Committee that's continuing to work. We've had some additional studies and analysis on the watershed. We've looked at a couple different aspects since then of detention structures that could be constructed in the upper ends, if you will, or really all around the watershed, and how those improvements might make the situation better, reduce some of the runoff at peak times when we do get a big storm. That's something that was illustrated during that event of some of the detention work that we have done within the city up around Seco Park, Little Kitten Creek Tributary, areas like that, which have helped. We didn't see as bad a flooding contributions from those particular areas a year ago. We've done a lot of aspects of educating folks on different aspects. We're very transient community with students and military, so we've had some drills since then, some areas where the flooding didn't get near as bad. That was one of the most significant events that we've had on the watershed as far as the degree of flooding that we've encountered. 7 to 9 inches of rain in the watershed, so a lot of buildings that were inundated, and obviously there were some damage to those buildings. We've had some buyouts that have occurred of residential property within the watershed. That's a voluntary program and funding assistance by FEMA and the State Department of Emergency Management, as well as some of our local matching funds that have been used for that. We have an item on tonight's agenda relative to a commercial property that's been vacant since that. Actually, parts of it have been vacant from earlier flooding than what this one was. But that flooding was there at Village Plaza. Previously had been maybe the deepest on the far south end of the structure, was maybe around 3 feet deep, and most of that was from backwater. So one of the improvements that was made was to put in a flapper gate to, there's a big storm sewer that runs underneath Seth Child Boulevard from that commercial development and empties into Wildcat Creek. And so we worked with KDOT on their right-of-way to put a flapper gate, which would allow water out but not let water back in. And actually, as I was on my way to the EOC that morning, I checked that parking lot and it was working good. It wasn't allowing that backwater, but this particular storm put the water up and over the old railroad bed or the Linear Park Trail, which had never happened before, at least that anybody could remember, certainly not in the more recent time. So that ended up flooding that development at the south end, pretty much right up to the rooftop, and significantly impacting the rest of that structure. And so that structure has been deteriorating ever since then. And so I can speak to that aspect of things a little more as we get on the agenda. But one of the things we spent a lot of time on was you know, trying to identify needs of individuals that were impacted. Obviously, we did an emergency evacuation of a lot of areas. We were fortunate that nobody got hurt during that event, and so we learned a lot about you know, our communication and operations during that event. We had some great support from the Manhattan Community Foundation that did some fundraising for flood victims, and that certainly was beneficial to a lot of those folks. And there are still, you know, some areas that have just recently been able to move back into some of those properties, and then there were others that decided they just didn't want to go through that again, and haven't are trying to work with us through the buyout program.
Yeah. Mike, do you have
any? I'd just say we've got this Wood Engineering who's done some studies both on the west and east side of Anderson Avenue all the way up to Riley, and identified some specific areas. I think we had two on the Fort Riley property and 12 that have been identified on the east side of the highway. Those, they basically do in-depth modeling, which allows you to see the impact of each one of those in combinations to reduce the flood coming down. So at peak times, it pulls it down by about 30%, I think, which makes quite an impact at the bottom end. So the steps kind of going forward, continue to work with Fort Riley on that side, and then we'll work with the county and the landowners on the east side to see if they want to add detention or add detention on top of their retention ponds. The other thing, as Ron mentioned, that I think speaks volumes to the community is the support that came from churches and other civic groups that reached out to the people in need. And one of the things we worked on, too, was making sure that before people moved into some of those areas that were at risk, that they knew those properties were at risk so they could make choices before they moved in. So getting people in and out was important. We had great support from the fire and police. So a real community effort, and it kind of gives you some greater understanding of the things that the people in the Bahamas and now in the southern, on the eastern shore of Florida are thinking about.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, we'll still see flooding every once in a while here in Manhattan. We saw it Friday. A storm came through, not to the severity of last year's Labor Day flood, but still there were some impacts on Friday.
Absolutely, there was some significant impacts on Friday. You know, about a 5-inch up to 5 inches and maybe a little bit more in some areas, but that had a significant impact on the east side of town. Fortunately, the Wildcat really had some minor flooding. We had to close Palisca Lane, which is not unusual during low flooding aspects, but I can get into a little bit more on some of our damage on the east side of town, but I understand we have a phone call.
We do. Let's get to that real quick. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Mayor, you just made a very, very profound statement, which is true. People should be advised it's a law that a real estate agent advises someone of a known material fact. And when they sell a property that's known that it could flood, they need to disclose that. Also, I don't know if that holds true with renters or not, but it could. It should. But anyway, people need to know when they move in those places that there's the potential of flooding. It's been proven. And we've got the same thing in Northview. We've got the same thing out there, downtown. They need to get right. You need to make a proclamation that says people need to be advised. I commend you for bringing that point forward, and you and the city manager are doing an excellent job. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, we have had some great support from FEMA. Those kind of things take a little bit of time, but we do have what I'd say are very good flood maps now of the area, which do a couple of things. It identifies to the public where these limits of probability are. So if you've got a 100-year flood or a 500-year flood, you know where the extent of that damage can be. And then it also serves to help those who are not in the floodplain to reduce, or on the edges of floodplain, to reduce your insurance costs. So we're trying to get more discrete information around the city, and hopefully we can get that to all the homeowners, including those who rent.
And I think that's a great point. That's something that, ultimately the Resiliency Committee will be bringing to the commission is a set of recommendations for different aspects. So, you know, part of that education or formal notification process, whether it's something that's on the lease for a rental or a commercial or residential lease, and you know, it's not you know, that flood insurance isn't just for areas that are in the floodplain. There's a lot of areas that were outside of the floodplain that got damaged. Flash flooding's a big example of that, yeah. which is what happened Friday. So all of those things are important aspects of how that works. We've been working hard on we have a community flood rating. So we have we've done various improvements in the community that has allowed folks to have a 20% discount on their flood insurance program, and we hope to improve on that particular number. And understand we got another phone call.
We do. Let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Well, now about the flood from last year, you can look right around there in the studio and see somebody that lost everything in that flood over there. And the other people that were in the Section 8s over there, Garden Way, losing their car and all their stuff. The least available, least opportune, whatever the term you would describe, the person who could least stand to lose those things now is of a opinion not to ride the bus because they used to have a car and they were into the car idea, even if it was a junk car, losing all that, and now they're trying to reform their life and not realizing about the social supports that you have here in town. I just think it's terrible that that bunch could still be leasing those apartments over there to people that don't have any idea what they're getting involved in. Thank you for trying to look out.
Appreciate the call, and certainly that is something that the committee is grappling with as to what kind of mandatory notices are there going to be. Should there be signage put in the area that this is a flood-prone area, and maybe even markers on signs that say, you know, in certain dates this was the level of the water. So there's a number of different avenues things can do, but certainly if you go to the city's website, there's a lot of information there that we've gleaned from that event and trying to inform people. The social network support you referenced is important to help folks to rebuild their lives, and I think you'll also see some recommendations for some potential hardening improvements that could occur that would make things safer and some more protective measures that might be put in place. Obviously, you've got low roadways and low parking, but the structures themselves may have some potential improvements that may be made, and maybe some different assistance programs that might be put in place to assist with that. So I think it's a component that needs to be looked at, as well as the continuing to look at the buyout program, trying to remove folks from living in an area that has known repetitive loss. And so that's really what that program's. Unfortunately, we don't have the ability to force those particular issues, and they're somewhat dependent on some grant funds, but it's all part of the picture of trying to make things better. And each time we have an event, try and make things better for folks so that they understand their risks.
We got to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Hayes Drive closure, if we can, and wrap up this conversation in just a moment. You're listening to News Radio KMAN.